Okay, good evening. It's Tuesday night, October 9th. Welcome to Rabbi Feldman's Shear. This week's Shear is sponsored by Donnie and Raquel Haupt in honor of their children, Batsheva, Yakira, and Netanel.
Thank you very much. Agenda was to continue the topic of chinuch, so it's appropriate that it should be in honor of children. It's kind of the idea. We started the topic a little bit before Sukkot, kind of coming from a Yom Kippur perspective, where we focused more on the negatives, the basic idea of keeping children away from prohibited items. So I'd like to continue that topic from the positive perspective more. Well, again, some reference to the negative component, but just a positive aspect of the mitzvah of chinuch. There is an obligation to train one's children in mitzvos, which is generally understood for the most part to be a mitzvah derabbanan. There are those who suggest that it might be a mitzvah to say midivrei Kabbalah, it might be a mitzvah that comes to us from the Nevi'im, as indicated by the pasuk Hanoch b'na'ar al-fidarko, so perhaps that can be taken as an instruction to not only educate children, but to educate children in an effective way that is appropriate for their ages and their styles and their approaches. And as we've discussed in the past, if something is considered to be a mitzvah sasei medivrei Kabbalah, there are those who maintain that that gives it a quasi-biblical status, that may actually have a weight that's similar to a mitzvah mehatorah. That's the discussion that you find in the Shuvah Ben Chazalazer. Katz Rebbe has that discussion about the mitzvah of chinuch. We perhaps treat it like it's a biblical mitzvah for that reason. For the most part, we generally assume that chinuch is a mitzvah derabbanan, at least in a sense, and we'll discuss there might be other senses as well. But at least in this way of practicing, of having children who are really not obligated in anything to do mitzvos, that's generally assumed to be a din derabbanan. And as we discussed before Sukkot, so we find somewhat of a context of chinuch in the context of Yom Kippur. And in that story, there is a machlokas rishonim on the side of the page of Yuma as whether or not there is chinuch in terms of the prohibitions. And it sounds like from that Gemara like there isn't. And there some rishonim explain that chinuch is only relevant to positive mitzvahs. You know, when it comes to non-kosher food, there's this other concept that we talked about before that, maybe all prohibitions, there's this other idea of Bezdin stopping children from being involved, but that's coming from a different perspective. But when it comes to a positive aspect of chinuch, so that that may only apply to mitzvah saseh, and that could be relevant to a discussion some achronim had as to what exactly is the purpose of chinuch. Now, on the one hand, it could be, and this is really what the word sounds like, that it could be that this is meant to train the child in mitzvot, so the child should know what to do. When he gets older, it shouldn't be a whole new experience, it shouldn't be a shock when they become bar mitzvah, and all of a sudden there's a whole new world they have to observe. So if they're trained beforehand, and if they're practiced and they're educated, so then we can assume that they'll continue this when they're fully obligated. But there is another possibility as well. It could be that it's not necessarily about that, but it's about a different concern. That you find there is an opinion in the Gemara which has generated a lot of literature, and it's interesting. We actually don't paskin like this opinion, so it's all theoretical. But there is an opinion in the Gemara in Bava Kamma that a blind person is not obligated in mitzvah. Someone's out from the pasuk. This is the view of Rabbi Yehuda, and there's a lot of discussion about what exactly that means. Does that mean that I'm chayiv at all? Is it only chayiv drabanan? Chayiv in mitzvahs ben einoach? Chayiv in positive mitzvahs? Not chayiv in negative mitzvahs? Etc. etc. And the whole thing is all theoretical, because we don't paskin like this opinion. We paskin that blind people are obligated in mitzvahs just as much as people who can see, unless it's a mitzvah that's impossible to do, a mitzvah that they can't perform without being able to see. So then anybody who can't perform a specific mitzvah is exempt from that mitzvah. But as a rule, so blind people are obligated in mitzvahs. So there was this one opinion in the Gemara that they're not obligated in mitzvahs, and there's a whole literature about this, and the Behudim, Kivegir, and Tosis, and Bans, a whole whole story, and many pages written about this view that we don't pass anyway. So there is a view that Tosis quotes over there in Bava Kamma, where this Gemara appears, one of the places where this Gemara appears, that we nonetheless, we have an obligation on a level midrabanan, because we want that they should look Jewish. And if they're not going to be involved in mitzvahs at all, so then there's not going to be any indication of being Jewish. Now, this is maybe not the way you would expect, But the understanding that Chronim have is that if that's the concern, if you're doing something just to appear Jewish, so to speak, just to have a connection to the Jewish people, so then this is actually only a concept that applies to mitzvahs aseh. Even though you could have said the other way around, you could think, well, you're definitely not going to look Jewish if you're eating non-kosher food, if you're involved in prohibitions. But apparently that's not the perspective that we're coming from the perspective that there has to be some overt connection to Judaism. So therefore, if that's the idea, it's something that's relevant specifically to mitzvahs aseh. So that those who understand that if chinuch is about looking Jewish, the idea is not so much that we're training the kids in mitzvahs, but the idea is that we want them to be identified with Judaism. We want our kids to be clearly and identifiably Jewish. So then maybe that's why there's this Yom Rishonim, the blood and the mitzvah, the author of the Sefer Yireim. This is something that's only relevant to mitzvahs aseh. There's also a question, as we discussed before Sukkot, whether this is an obligation on the father only or on both parents. So there is a Gemara in Masachas Nazir, a Gemara on Daf Chav Tes over there, which has a drasha that only the father is really obligated in chinuch. So and we read the Rambam and others paskim like that. But there's a commentary in the back of Masachas Nazir called Arach Mishur, it's printed in the back of the Gemara, points out that it's a machlokis in the Gemara, and it's not really at all clear that that's the final word on the subject, that it's only an obligation on the father. Could be, it really is an obligation on both parents. And in any event, even if it's strictly speaking an assertive obligation on behalf of the father, a lot of Achronim assume that to keep away from negatives, in the other sense that we talked about before Yantif, that certainly is an obligation on the father and the mother and whoever else has any influence. And also to make sure that the positive chinuch takes place in a effective way is also an obligation on the mother according to everybody. That's what Bakshi Daron has a tshuva about that in the Sefer Binyanav, explaining the Gemara that we mentioned, the Gemara Masechta Sukkah, which wants to bring a proof from how Hillel Malka behaved in the Sukkah with her sons. And the Gemara says even though she's exempt, she's a woman, but she was worried about her children, and her children were of chinuch age. So apparently the mother is obligated in chinuch. So here, Rav Bakshi Daron and others write, that's because once the chinuch is happening, to make sure that it happens properly, that's for sure an obligation upon the mother. And again, it could be that we don't even pass them like that, Gemara, that's a little bit of a question. So there is a possibility as well that the obligation is equally upon both parents in all senses of the word.
Hi.
Right, so that, the Gemara Maseches Kedushin, which talks about teaching them to make a living and teaching them how to swim, so that's really separate from this concept. That's a... Correct. So then that's also a little bit different, but we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get on. That's talking about the general educational values you impart to your children, which are clearly fundamentally crucial. But here we're talking about something more specific, although we will come back to what you're talking about. We're talking about the idea of training in specific mitzvahs, which has, and that's, you know, again, a din derabanan, comes from a little bit of a different place. So Truma Sadeshin is one of the Rishonim. He does take the view that the reason we train children to do mitzvot is so they should have a habit, so they should be educated to it beforehand. Because he writes that the act of a child is not really significant. This happens to be a whole pilpul in the Achronim. It's with Mr. Chaim about this in the stencils. Mr. Chaim took out the question of whether a act that a child does, whether it's a mitzvah or whether it's an aver, does it have the status of an aver as a mitzvah? Okay, they're not obligated to do mitzvahs, they're not prohibited to do averes. But at the end of the day, if they do it, is it considered to be an aver? So there's a number of proofs that Reb Chaim brings, quoted in the Chiddush of Chaim on Shas, that the action of a katan does have the status of an action of an aver. And there are others who disagree. There are others who would maintain there isn't any real status to an act that's performed by a child, and therefore the only reason maybe we would be training them is so that they should be habituated in the mitzvahs, that they should be able to perform them when they grow up. The Prima Gaudium also notes that, you know, we define adulthood as coming at bar mitzvah, coming at age 13 or age 12, boys and girls respectively. The truth is that's not the real standard. The real standard is physical maturity, which is a combination both of physical characteristics and also intellectual intellectual maturation. But we use 13 and 12 as a approximation, an average. The average boy is mature at the age of 13, and the average girl is mature at the age of 12. But the truth is that's not really the cutoff point. That we use that for really mitzvot rabbanan. That's why you may often see that if it's, let's say, Parsha Zachar, when the Kriyas HaTorah is assumed to be an obligation of HaTorah, so the general practice is not to let a Bar Mitzvah boy lay in that Parsha, because we let a Bar Mitzvah boy lay in everything else, because the obligation of Kriyas HaTorah is assumed to be a rabbinical obligation. So for the purpose of the rabbinical obligation, we rely on this rule that 13 and 12 is the average. You can rely on the Chazakah, the presumption of the average. But when it comes to biblical law, we want to be more sure, so we'd rather have an adult with a beard, you know, somebody who had a beard, and have that type of confidence. So what if you have somebody who is older than 13, but really is not an adult in the halachic sense? So is there still an obligation of chinuch? So it says in the Prima Gadim that there is an obligation of chinuch that goes on, even beyond the age of 13, even older, if that's the case, if real maturity hasn't set in. So if the whole point is training, you could argue that the training should be the same time period for everybody. So once you hit that age, then it's effectively done already. So maybe the point is that it's not about training according to that opinion, but it's about that we don't want any member of the Jewish people to not be involved in mitzvot to some degree, and therefore, even if it's not related to training anymore, maybe there should still be an obligation of quote-unquote chinuch, which is relevant to the very chomer shaila, which we're not going to try to address from a halach l'maisa perspective. But let's say if you have somebody who is mentally challenged, somebody who's not obligated in mitzvahs from that perspective, we call in halachic terms a shota. So then the question is there an obligation of, so to speak, chinuch in that sense also? That chinuch doesn't necessarily mean because there's going to be an expectation that there's going to be a different status, but maybe it means, again, that all members of the Jewish people are supposed to be involved in mitzvot to some degree. And that's a very, very serious shaila that the Chacham Sofer talks about and Moshe Feinstein talks about. It's related to the question of what if somebody has to be institutionalized, and then very often the institution is not going to be one that is serving kosher food or is involved in other halachic observances. So is there an obligation to seek out an institution which can provide all that, which very often may not be reasonably possible, and what it is may be dramatically more expensive? That's a very serious question that the post can take up, which really relates to this issue, that essentially if somebody is not of sound mind, if somebody is not fully developed in that area, then really a person is exempt from it, so it doesn't have to observe halacha. But the question is there a chinuch type obligation which creates a rabbinical obligation? And that's the question folks can talk about. That's a very serious issue. I think we alluded to before Yontif that there is a comment the Ritva has in the beginning of his commentary to Masech HaSukkah and Daf Beis. What the Ritva says, he wants to give people a little bit of a Musa Shmuz. They should know that when they train children in mitzvot, that they shouldn't think that it's okay to train them in a half-hearted way, that they could do a mitzvah in a way that wouldn't really work as an adult, because since they're only kids, it doesn't really matter. The way he understands that chinuch has to be done in a full form, has to be done with mitzvot that are completely kosher, be'achshar gomer, and that's crucial. And he says, I have to write this because I see there are people who misunderstand this point, therefore I have to come and emphasize that that's the way it has to be done. You don't give the children a non-kosher lulav and esrog, you have to give them a kosher lulav and esrog. That's all part of the mitzvah of chinuch. Some later sfarim point out that the Ritva may be contradicting himself, because elsewhere the Ritva seems to agree with the plan that the first day sukkah, when we have an obligation that you have to own the lulav, so it's a little problematic. If you're going to give your lulav to a child, so it's a question whether a child can perform a transaction to give it back to you. So once you give it to him, so then he's going to have it, and then it's a question if anybody else could use it after him. So there is a suggestion which the Ritva agrees, where you can give it to him in a way that it's never really his, and then it comes back to you afterwards because the sale is canceled, the transfer is canceled. Right, so for reasons we won't get into right now, a child can acquire, but he can't give back. So you're going to get stuck if you want to come afterwards. But apparently, the Ritva agrees to this plan where you can have it conditionally canceled so that it was never really the possession of the child. He really borrowed it. So, but that doesn't work. You can't have a borrowed lulav. So the Ritva says you have to train children 100%. So how can you have a way that doesn't really work? So there's discussion about this in the Chuvas Hesoris Chuva. It was one of the descendants of the Kivager, and at the bottom of the page is a commentary called the Ikli Sofa, where he discusses this question. He says, I think there's a difference. That there's one thing, a lulav that's inherently possible. It's missing parts of it or whatever it is. So then that's really training them in a faulty way. That's where we're going to grow up and take it. The lulav doesn't have to be complete. Doesn't have to be right. But here, a question of ownership, it doesn't relate to the actual mitzvah itself. I mean, that means that they're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah, but they wouldn't be in fulfillment of the mitzvah anyway. They're not obligated to the mitzvah. So the mechanics are all right. It happens to be that, technically speaking, they don't have the conditions to fulfill the mitzvah. But that's not a problem. They're not obligated to the mitzvah anyway. So something that's inherently flawed, that would be a problem. But the fact that this process doesn't result in them fulfilling the mitzvah, that shouldn't be a problem because they're not obligated in this. There are those who understand this point homiletically, that it's not only that we want to train children that they should also do mitzvahs properly, but that specifically chinuch should be done in a way that is of the highest standard. That way, it's all the more important when we're training that the mitzvah be at the highest level, and it's more important than it is for adults, and that's where you may even stick to a higher standard. And I think we mentioned before Sukkot that the Mishnah talks about the different standards that there are for different mitzvahs, not all mitzvahs are the same, and different mitzvahs are understood at different ages. So depending on what the mitzvah requires, it starts at a different age, and so on starts the latest because it involves a certain amount of being able to watch yourself. So that's why we wait until a month before bar mitzvah. It's a very late starting date. So in that context, the Mishnah says that when it comes to a lulav, this week, I think we did mention before Sukkot, when it comes to a lulav, katan hayadeh l'naneh, if a katan knows how to shake a lulav, so then we will give him a lulav. So the commentaries ask, why is it if he knows how to shake? That's not crucial to fulfill the mitzvah. You can fulfill the mitzvah without shaking. The Gemara says many times that you fulfill the mitzvah of lulav and esrog the moment you pick it up. That's why we turn the esrog upside down and make the bracha, because otherwise the bracha will be after the mitzvah, because the moment you pick it up, you're already in fulfillment. Shaking of lulav is really a hiddur. It's really an extra part of the mitzvah. So why don't we say that a katan who knows how to lift, as soon as he has the power to hold something, we should give him a lulav and esrog. Why do we say he knows how to shake? So here again, the commentaries say that when it comes to chinuch, we want the chinuch to be of the highest standard. So it's not only that they're going to be yotze, but that they're going to be yotze in the full-fledged performance of the mitzvah. That's a crucial standard. So homiletically, some connect this to Chanukah. As we know, Chanukah is about chinuch. It's not coincidental. The word is the same. The chinuch mikdash, the training of the inauguration of the mikdash, is the same thing as the inauguration of children into adulthood. So there is a famous question that Achronim discussed, the whole miracle of Chanukah, they should have pure oil. So why do you need pure oil? There is a Gemara that tells us that for the needs of the tzibur, we say tumah hutra b'tzibur, that the tzibur, the congregation as a whole, if their needs dictate it, they're allowed to use impure oil. So you could have gotten away without the whole mitzvah of Chanukah. Who needs the pure oil? Let them just have the impure oil, and that would have been enough. So homiletically, one of the answers that they give is that at the stage of chinuch, at the stage when you're training somebody to start from there, then everything's got to be perfect. You can't rely on anything but the other. Then you have to have the pure oil, you have to have the cut and hay, dale, and an egg. Everything's got to be totally in place. So that's a point that many make. There's also a discussion whether there's an obligation of chinuch by mitzvahs d'rabbanan. That's a little bit of a question in the Achronim, the Prima Gadim, and the Berakhi Yosef. The Chidah has a suffix about this, and it applies to Neres Chanukah and things like that. And when it comes to Yisurim, the view of the Rashba, it's Machlokas Rishonim, but the view of the Rashba is that the prohibition to feed children something that's prohibited only applies to something that's prohibited Minat Torah. It doesn't apply to something that's prohibited Midrabanan. And that came up in our discussion of Yom Kippur, that the question is, if the prohibitions on Yom Kippur are all Minat Torah, the prohibition of taking a bath and of anointing yourself, if that's all Minat Torah, then the question was asked, why is it that we allow children to do this? The assumption being that if it was Rabbanan, it wouldn't necessarily be as much of a problem. So that's a sophic in the Achronim. And the question may have to do with, on one foot, without getting into this topic fully, the question of there might be, when it comes to Dinah Minat Torah, that there's an inherent significance to them. So, children should at least be attached to these mitzvahs, they don't understand them, and they're not really obligating them because there's an inherent significance to a din min ha-Torah. But a din min rabbanan is not really something that's inherently significant. It's a way we're told to behave. So if you're not obligated to mitzvahs, maybe we're not gonna tell the child to take on this obligation. So it's actually an interesting discussion. There is a discussion among the Rishonim on the following point. We know that in order to be motzi somebody else, in let's say through Shemaya Ka'ona, if I'm going to bench for you, if I'm going to recite a bracha on your behalf, so I have to be as obligated as you are. So if you're obligated on a level of Minat Torah, so I have to be obligated on a level of Minat Torah. If you're obligated Midrabanan, it could be enough for me to be obligated on the Midrabanan. So, or to assume, let's say when it comes to Mitzvah Berachos HaMazon, so you're at Mitzvah Minat Torah, so let's say you have a father and a son eating together. So the son who's under Bar Mitzvah shouldn't be able to bench for the father because the father's obligated in Minat Torah, and the son's only obligated in Midrabanan. But let's say the father is obligated midrabban. Let's say, for example, if he didn't eat until he was fully satiated, we assume you're only chayv min haTorah and benching if you eat enough that you're full. If you ate a kezias but you're not full, so then you're obligated midrabban. So if the father only ate a kezias but he wasn't full, so he's obligated midrabban, and the son's also obligated midrabban. So can the son be motzi the father? That's the whole discussion in the Rishonim. So there might be two reasons why, maybe not. One reason is if a son also isn't really full, so the some Rishonim have a concept called Trei Drabanan. The son's two levels removed, so we count each level separately. So the father's obligated Midrabanan, and the son's obligated Midrabanan twice, because he's not full either, and he is only obligated because of Chinuch. What if the son is full and the father's not full? So then does that make them equal? So the father's obligated midrabanan and the son's also obligated midrabanan? So some Rishonim thought yes, but some Rishonim thought no. So why should it be that they're not equal? So a number of Rishonim understood, and the truth is this is very compelling, that when we say that the child is obligated midrabanan, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that they have a chiyuv drabanan to do mitzvos. Because how do you have a chiyuv drabanan? Right, so let's assume, let's take the view for the moment, we'll take the view of the Rambam. Rambam's opinion is, because the Torah says, well, Sosser Minadava, the Torah in Parsha Shofar tells us we can't deviate from that which the rabbis say, so we're obligated in Drabban. But children aren't obligated in anything. If you're not obligated in anything, how could you be obligated in Drabban? If you're not obligated to listen to the Torah, which says follow the Drabban, so then we can't obligate you on a level Drabban either. So some Rishonim understand that Chinuch doesn't mean that we say children are obligated midrabanan. It's an obligation on the father. The father has to tell the kids to do mitzvot. The father has to tell the kid to bench. But it's not his obligation. It's not the kid's obligation. So therefore, we don't say that the father is obligated midrabanan and the kid's also obligated midrabanan. The kid's not obligated at all. There's a mitzvah midrabanan on the father to make the kid do that. So that was the machlokas harishonim. Do we say that the child is obligated on a rabbinical level? Or do we say that, no, there's really no obligation on the child. The obligation is purely on the father, and therefore it's not shy for the kid to do that at all. So that's a question that has a number of ramifications, and there are a number of discussions about this issue. It relates to a question we mentioned a few minutes ago. When a child does the mitzvah, it's because of chinuch reasons. So is that a mitzvah? Is he doing a mitzvah? Or maybe he doesn't have any obligation at all. It's not a mitzvah d'orais, it's not a mitzvah d'rabbanan. It's only the father fulfilling what he has to do, and there's no status at all. So for example, let's say a child does sit in a sukkah, or use a lulav and esrog. So we have the status the Gemara tells us called the huktzum mitzvah. So that if a object is used for a mitzvah, so then it's really prohibited to get hung off from it. It's prohibited to benefit from it in other contexts. So what if a child uses it for a mitzvah? So is that considered to be huktzum mitzvah so or not? You say the child is performing a mitzvah derabanan with this object, or you say no, the child has no mitzvah at all. It's not derais or derabanan. So that was a din, a discussion about that in his service. Too, that was a question that the Acharonim talked about in his various indications in the Rishonim one way or another, which also really seems to go to this question. And that's relevant to a number of other things. The question of the Rambam seems to sound like Tanim could perhaps make a Zimun together. So again, the question is, do they have any level of obligation in mitzvah? So do we say no, their act is not really considered to be a mitzvah? An extension of this, Reuven Grozovsky, who's one of the great Rashi Yeshiva, has a sefer Chedushei Reuven, and his sefer on Sukkah, he has a piece on chinuch, and he discusses the question, do we say, so an extension of this idea of a child obligated in the mitzvah, is a child obligated in his own chinuch? Is a child obligated to participate in the process of chinuch? So that's the question, what difference does it make? Rav Nachman Gestetner, for example, has a tshuva, which is on a related point. There is a discussion we have, Tisha B'Av, that's pushed off. And so Tisha B'Av is supposed to be on Shabbos, and it ends up being on Sunday. So So there's a question that Aharonim asked, what if you have a bar mitzvah boy who only became bar mitzvah on that Sunday? So is he obligated to fast also? Do we say that it's the makeup for the fast he missed the day before, and he was a child then, so he's not obligated to make it up? Or do you say it's a new chiyuv on Sunday? So Nosson Gishtetin, the Tshuva Slaharis Nosson, is a Tshuva about this. He says that even if you say it was a makeup for yesterday, so yesterday he was obligated from chinuch, so now he has his own chinuch, he has to make up the next day. This is also a questionable assumption, because the question is to what extent there is chinuch by Tisha B'Av, which is also a complicated discussion. We generally assume that there's no chinuch by Avelis, that if Rachman Otzlan, a child loses a relative, there's really no obligation of Shiva. There's an obligation of Kriya, which is a separate thing. But Avelis doesn't have a din of chinuch. So whether or not Tisha B'Av should have a concept of chinuch has a little bit to do with the question of what is Tisha B'Av all about, which is a separate discussion in and of itself. So that's part of this question, is there an obligation of chinuch not only on the parent but also on the child? Again, Rav Nosson Gishtetin in his Tshuvos when he talks about putting on tefillin. So there he writes that the child who puts on tefillin for the first time before his bar mitzvah, not before his bar mitzvah, so he doesn't make a shafianu. So why doesn't he make a shafianu? Because he's not performing a mitzvah now. He makes a bracha because a child is practicing the mitzvah, so he's also practicing the bracha. So he makes a bracha of tefillin. But the bracha of shafianu is on the mitzvah itself, so he doesn't make a bracha of shafianu on the tefillin because he's not really performing the mitzvah at that time. The Sipesach Frank has an interesting tshuva, where he talks about whether it's appropriate or not for teachers to write Ezus Hashem on the blackboard, knowing they're going to have to erase it. So he discusses that maybe the need of chinuch overrides the problem of erasing it. Now, the truth is, it's a little bit of a iffy question on both sides. It's not so clear that there's really a prohibition of Mechikas Hashem from erasing Avei's Hay, which he acknowledges. It's also not so clear what the mitzvah is. So from both sides, it's a little bit of a shaky equation, but he quotes there as a posted from the Masechet Pesachim, which talks about the Korban Pesach. So normally it's on Daf Pesach. Normally when it comes to the Korban Pesach, so we have a strict prohibition that only people who are part of the Chabur are allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach, and if you're not part of the Menuyim, if you're not part of the group that was assigned to this Chabur, so you can't eat from the Korban Pesach. So children really can't be part of the minyan, and yet they eat the Korban Pesach anyway. So it sounds like supposed to stay there because the chinuch is permitted. So that is a prohibition for an outsider to eat, and because of the chinuch, we allow it. So it's unclear to what extent does the chinuch of a mitzvah allow you to overcome a related prohibition, and whether or not it's a great comparison. You could maybe question, but that's something that the Sipesach Pesach brings into this equation as maybe possibly relevant. It's also probably relevant to the story that we mentioned from the Avnei Nezer. We mentioned that before Sukkos, a famous story that we like to say over, that the Avnei Nezer, I guess we have to make the age earlier now than last time we said it, so he was 5 minutes old. So the Avnei Nezer was some absurdly young age, and he was eating on Yom Kippur because he was in the process of being born. And so they asked him, Avnei, are you going to make Kiddush? Should make Kiddush on Yom Kippur? And his response was, there's no reason for me to make Kiddush, because why would I make Kiddush? I'm a newborn, why would I make Kiddush? I make Kiddush because of chinuch, because I need to know what I'm going to do when I'm going to get older. So when I get older, I don't plan on eating on Yom Kippur. So why should I make Kiddush to train myself to make Kiddush when I grow up? I'm not going to be eating on Yom Kippur, it's not going to be relevant. So that seems to suggest that the issue is training more than being Jewish, because he's focusing on what's going to be relevant when he grows up. So when he grows up, he doesn't plan on it being an issue of eating. And the Chuvis Shraga HaMeir of Schnellbag from London has a discussion of the story, right? So then maybe he should say he shouldn't bench either, because when he grows up, he's not going to be eating on Yom Kippur, so he shouldn't bench as well. So he says, no, that's not really a question, because benching is a general obligation that's true all the time. So whenever he's going to eat, he's going to bench, even if it happens to be on Yom Kippur. But Kiddush is something that we would only institute because of Yom Kippur, because of the end of Yom Kippur, and since when he grows up, it's not going to be relevant. So there's no need to institute it now in honor of what's not going to be when he grows up. So all of this is relevant to the obligation of chinuch, again, as it's seen as a mitzvah de Rabbanan. But as Mr. Weiser pointed out, there are meta values that we're obligated to teach our children, which clearly we're not going to say is only an obligation to do up on them. We have a mitzvah, v'shinan tam levanecha, you have to teach your children Torah, and you have to teach your children the totality of Torah values, which is clearly not something we're going to say that the rabbis came and instituted anew. This is clearly something that's from the Torah itself. When I was in high school, I remember the Rosh Yeshiva of Shalvim at the time was the Meir Schlesinger, and when he came to speak in the high school on the recruiting trip, so he gave a shir about the topic of chinuch, and he wanted to make this point that really chinuch exists on two levels. There's a general obligation of chinuch to raise from children, and that's for sure an obligation min ha-Torah. And then there's an obligation midrabanan of specific mitzvot, because to train the child to bench, to train the child to daven, train the child to do whatever specific action. And that's midrabanan. So at times, and this is something that's very relevant, at times there can be a clash between the two. Children tend to go through rebellious stages. So you could have a time where if you're going to insist every single time the child do the mitzvah perfectly, no matter what stage of life he's in, so you may have a situation where you're going to be so insistent on always benching and always having whatever it is, that the child's going to rebel even more, and then he's going to grow up and he's not going to be firm at all. So if it's a situation where the Rabbanan Chinuch is undermining the Deraisa Chinuch, so he thought it was the Davar Pashut that the Deraisa Chinuch has to take priority, and it's a much broader imperative, and there are times when this Rabbanan is going to give way to a Din Torah, and he mentioned that he said this before his Rebbe Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who agreed that this was certainly a self-evident conclusion. Allah HaLamaisa. Okay, so maybe we'll just quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that there is an obligation of training children in mitzvahs, and in contrast to what we just said, it's generally assumed to be a mitzvah de Rabbanan. We mentioned the possibility that it may have a status of a mitzvah de Divrei Kabbalah because of the pasuk of Chanoch Unar al Pi Dargo, but the general attitude we have towards this is that it's a din de Rabbanan. And then we raise the question that some of the Achronim discussed: is the purpose of this mitzvah to train children in mitzvah so that when they grow up they're going to know what to do, or is it in general that even if somebody is not obligated in mitzvahs, but if they're Jewish, we want that they should have Jewish practices, that they should be connected to the Jewish people? And we discussed that maybe relevant to the question of whether this applies only to positive mitzvahs or negative mitzvahs as well. We mentioned how that's related to the Tosfos and Bavakama about the one not accepted opinion that somebody who's blind is not obligated in mitzvahs. We discussed a little bit the question of the obligation of the mother. It sounds like from the Gemara and Nazir that only the father is obligated, and that's Hashem, Rishon, and Paskin, but there's also a possibility of this other opinion that the father and the mother are obligated equally, and the general consensus is that certainly the mother is obligated to keep the children from prohibition and to make sure that the chinuch is happening in an effective way. And we talked about the Shumas Hadeshin's view that essentially there's no significance to the act of a child, so it's just a practice, and we contrasted that a little bit with Reb Chaim's proof that the act of a child is considered to be an act as far as being a there, as far as being a mitzvah, even if it's not punishable or accredited to a child. And we talked about the question of what about somebody who's exempt from mitzvahs on a permanent level, if there's somebody who's mentally challenged in that way, so is there an obligation to worry about chinuch for them? As far as training, it would seem not to apply, but as far as identifying with Jewish people, it would seem like it would be relevant, and that's an extremely important question. As far as institutionalizing people, if it has to be in a kosher institution, and if other halachas have to be observed, this is the topic of the discussion in the Chacham Sofer and in the Igros Moshe. And then we talked about the attitude of the Ritva that many Achronim Paskin like, that chinuch has to be done in a way that everything is 100%. And not just 100%, but the full 100%. That's why the Mishnah says that in order to train a child to do Luv and Esrog, it's not enough to know how to pick it up, they have to know how to shake it. And we talked about the Hamalayah connection to Chanukah. Why with Chanukah we insisted on pure oil, even if maybe we could have gotten away without pure oil, because at the moment of Chinuch, at the moment of inauguration, everything's got to be 100%. And then we talked about the question in Rishonim, if a child could be mostly, let's say, an adult in, say, benching, if the adult is only chayiv midrabanan, so do we say, well, the child is also chayiv midrabanan, so therefore they're equal? So we talked about the view in Rishonim that sometimes there's a concept of two drabanan, so that in theory could be a problem, but even if we could cancel out that issue, or even according to Rishonim we don't have that issue, there might still be a problem, because it may be that children aren't obligated in mitzvahs at all. They're not even on a level of the Drabbanim. The obligation is purely for the father, and that's what we mean, is the Drabbanim obligation on the father to do this, and not an obligation on the child. And then we talked about when a child does a mitzvah, like he sits in a sukkah, or he takes a lulav, does it have a status of a mitzvah in order to create nisr ha-na'arat? And the question of zimah, things like that, all seem to be relevant to this question. We talked about Ruvir and Gazovsky's discussion about whether the child is chayiv in his own chinuch, as he's obligated to participate in his own education. And we discussed Rav Nassim Gestetner's discussion about whether a child is obligated to make up Tisha B'Av from the time when he wasn't chayiv. Do we say that his chinuch is something that's his own responsibility, that he comes and picks up on this now as well? And then discussed the question that Sibesa Frank has about writing on the blackboard, you're going to erase Beis Hay for purposes of chinuch, and how he brought in the Tosfos himself and about the child eating the Korban Pesach, even when strictly speaking he should be considered an outsider, but because the chinuch mitzvah is permitted to the Tosfos, and what exactly can you extrapolate from that? And then we talked about the Adin Ezer's position about not making Kiddush on Yom Kippur as a child. We said there's no point in doing it because when he grows up he doesn't plan on eating on Yom Kippur, which seems to suggest it's all about training, not about other things. And then we discussed the question of, well, so then maybe you should say you shouldn't bench either, and the explanation in the Shraga HaMeir that benching is a mitzvah in of itself, while Kiddush would be a Kiddush for Yom Kippur. And then we discussed as well, we also mentioned, I mentioned earlier, the contrast between, even though the Ritzva says you have to do everything perfectly, but nonetheless he's willing to allow a situation where the child doesn't own the lulav really, even though an adult wouldn't be okay that way. And I mentioned the distinction that Achronim say, that if the object is flawed, so then that's a bad way to train a child, but if the problem is just everything's done right, but the child's not going to be in fulfillment of the mitzvah, so maybe he's not obligated in this anyway, that's not necessarily a problem. And then we discussed the position of that the Meir Schlesinger explained, that a lot of Achronim have this idea as well, that there are really two obligations, an obligation to the Rabbanan to practice mitzvahs, but there's also a bigger obligation in the Torah to raise children who are going to be observant and who are going to be learning and are going to be following the values of the Torah. And in theory, if there's a conflict, if you insist on the Rabbanan, it's going to undermine the attempt to instill the broad level of respect for Judaism and HaTorah, so then it would seem to clearly be, as Rav Shlomo Zalman apparently agreed, that the priority should be the Dereisa to impart the value system as a whole more than any specific mitzvah, which is an obligation to the Rabbi. Okay, I guess we'll stop there. I think it's almost time for Meyer downstairs. And we should all have a wonderful week.